right, I think we should be good.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, waveform's coming through our bow.
Mic check. Yeah, we're good.
All right, whenever you're ready.
All right. This is new for me, man.
Welcome back.
Hello, people. I know this is a surprise. You're used to just hearing our voices and shit. But we are here, the North of Samora podcast, live on location. Your boy flew thousands of miles just to record an episode. No, I'm joking.
I was going to say, I think I got deported.
We had to come. I had to come and do this. There was no other way. It was a special episode. No, I'm here in Zoom with my boy. I came back to kind of come and see the people and kind of, you know, create some roots here, some business roots. And, you know, well, decided to holler at the guy and say, let's do an episode live on location. Homecoming. How are you, my man?
I'm tired, bro.
Tired?
I'm tired. I hate this country.
First of all, cheers. Here we go. Yeah.
What's what? 11 years, 12 years in the making?
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, okay.
It's buddy, been it's been a while. It has been a while.
Gin mix Jaguga, Debu Canada.
You're a Jean-Wai. You want mine?
No,
give it a minute for the Mazoyo. Give it a minute. The Mazoyo will kick in. But yeah, man, so how's the day been? I know you've had a busy-ass day. And you tell me some great news, so I don't know if it's news that you want
to
share.
Not yet. We have to close that first. But yeah, some really interesting things happening.
Yeah.
I mean, if you see us in the studio, I mean, the next couple of months, don't be surprised.
Don't be surprised.
don't say I didn't say it. And
boy is working over here.
Hey, bro, I'm trying, bro. Zim is unforgiving. But, like, the good part about being in Zim is the networks you create.
Yeah.
If you can create good networks and people who are like-minded, same values, I'm stuck with Rana, I'm not sure, you'll be fine. But if you're Makoronyera and I'm Siamwa,
Hustlers. Everybody, that's the thing that I know is Yen Zimbabwe, is that everybody is a hustler.
Yep.
There's hustling everywhere. Remember, I was telling you, I was taking a drive and then every corner, everywhere. There's one place where I was like, this used to be just open land, and now like, I can understand the hustle is real here, man. You got to really just be on your hustle. There's no other way to make money.
Nah, man.
The workforce is my one, yeah?
There's no employment, man. Like, there really is no employment unless, even if you've got a college degree, I got friends with college degrees, and they realize being employed is actually does you a disservice because you are now earning a paycheck on someone else's earning potential.
Mm.
So how do you turn that into a living?
Mm.
So rent is expensive. Nigga, rent is going up in Zim and they haven't remodeled in years. Same apartments you're all living in the 1980s, the same apartments you're living in now in town, and they're telling you $450 a month. Two bedroom, that are $450. But luckily I the location situation for me was better because I pulled together my sisters. We live in a cluster. But I mean it's better than trying to, you know, find accommodation now because the market is wild.
And you have to find a way, I guess. I'm only just getting used to that now, just being able to see how that's getting back used to it, I guess, because you know a lot of things are just coming back to me like, oh, okay, this has never changed in Zim and we're still doing this and we're still doing that. The roads, we're having a conversation about it before, but that has been like, I used to read my tweets, like Sean used to tweet and everyone used to tweet the Zim roads are an extreme sport.
We're lying to you guys.
I knew it was real.
Yeah.
But I had no idea how real it was. Like, I had no idea just how crazy it is. Like, dude, we were going out 2 weeks ago. And, you know, I told you, like, by intersection, there's an intersection on Enterprise. And there's never been lights there ever, anyway. But there's always been an understanding between, okay, when it's clear, you cross the road. When it's not clear, whatever. Now we're there, it's nighttime. There's this joker who I'm assuming he's just gonna understand it's not clear.
Yeah.
He's gonna give way and wait his turn. No. This motherfucker enters at night and says, I coin toss.
Yes.
And I had to hit the brakes so fast. That was my welcome back to Zimbabwe moment there.
Yes.
Where I was like, okay, holy shit. they are motherfucking crazy over here.
Oh yeah, no, that is, the roads are something you need to get used to. And you're lucky, like we're talking earlier, that you haven't gone downtown. It's not drivable. I remember one of my friends, Joanna, we were going to buy groceries and stuff. So we buy in bulk to make it easier, you know, and also she's a civil servant. So, you know, it makes things easier to buy things ahead of time. Although she's not like one of those, you know, waiting for, you know, heaven to open up. No, yeah. She's literally hustling as everybody is. So we go downtown. So Seke Road, you take a right off Seke Road before you go down off the flyover.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, I've got the name of the area. Yeah, but take it on my bus. So I've got the name of the place, but you go right. And then you go left, straight left. Just after the right, you go left.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? When you imagine, you know what's going on.
Yeah.
And you see it on the ground. And you see the difference.
Yeah.
And we still had to cross through Mbare after this to go and collect something else.
That's always been dangerous.
So I hadn't been Mbare in a minute. Like, I think it's been like 4 months since I've been there. Reason. The chaos there was better because it was like finding parking.
Mm.
And there are no lines demarcating which parking space is which, but you still see city parking there, wanting there $1 an hour. but guys, you want $1 an hour. Cool, we park. We do the shopping, it's no problem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, Wanguga. You know what? So she was using Google Maps.
Yeah.
I don't know the fuck we were going, but she was using Google Maps.
Uh-huh.
That we ended up in it was a single lane road, almost like an access road for flea market.
Right.
And there was another truck coming that way. You know when you want to get out the road, mm-hmm. while watching someone's merchandise over there, making sure I don't hit shit. But the beauty of those places is the chaos shows you that regardless of what's going on in Zim, people, like you said earlier, are hustling. Business is continuing to move and people are going anyway, anyhow. And I remember she was like, I know, how do people survive in places like this? I'm like, you'd be surprised to know this is where most of the money is made in Zim.
Exactly.
To be fair, this is where most of the cash in Zim comes from and it's made because these guys hold currency, hold cash.
Mm.
There's no POS machine, there's no EcoCash, it's straight up USD for services and goods.
Mm.
Like, if you see what's going on, because we parked up to like get whatever she needed to get, and I'm seeing them like 50, 60 bucks changing hands.
Mm.
$100 changing hands. I'm like, this is the trade.
Nice.
It shouldn't be
nice.
Like this, though.
Yeah.
It really shouldn't. But no, it is what it is. What can you say?
It's the one thing that Simon was telling me about Zim, saying that you don't understand how, but things work.
Yeah.
Things are working. It makes no sense. It's chaotic as fuck, but things are working. And I think the road is like a metaphor. The roads are a metaphor of that. You have no idea how things are working.
Yep.
I have no idea how people are just driving like this and just being able to survive on a daily for the last 6 or 7 years. But people are surviving.
Oh, yeah.
People are driving. Mm. I was in the car with my mom, bro, and I was just like, yo, moms, this is how you're moving. Every day, this is how you move. But, you know, things work. And I guess that's just how Zimbabwe has always been, is that things, amongst all the dysfunction and craziness and the wish for a better world and a better way of living, things still work. People find a way to work. Find a way to make things work.
I mean, I wish it wasn't this chaotic. Yeah. Like, I wish they were easier, not easier, but things that are straightforward to make what's happening, to make people's lives a little bit better. Because it's just a few changes. It's not like it's going to take the world. It's just a few little changes you can make in order to make things a lot easier. One thing is just, like, everybody pays their, you know, Zinara every single quarter or every single term, however they want to call it. And we don't really know how that money is properly used. So the first misconception I came up, I'm like, Zinara actually fixes the roads. They don't.
Yeah.
They have no reason to fix roads. They're an administration. But then you find out the chain of events for that money to come to filling a pothole or to resurfacing a road. Yeah. The amount of bureaucracy that exists between that point, the point of the customer paying or the citizen paying to the point of it getting fixed,
mm-hmm.
is so wide, and there's so many loopholes, and there's so many, you're like, no wonder why this money doesn't get where it needs to get to. We need to find a way to simplify it.
We do.
Because City Parking is one organization I've never understood. I've never understood what City Parking's job is. You are meant to collect money from us for parking in town. Fair.
Where does that money go?
Where does it go?
Yeah.
Like, I know it's a private company and they do whatever they need to do, but I'm like, at the end of the day, what are we paying for? Mm-hmm. Because we thought we were paying for those meters, you know, those meters back in the day where you just, you know, I mean, you're in Canada, you know what I'm talking about. Pay for your parking with a meter digitally, whatever.
Yeah.
No, you're literally paying to someone, an actual human being who you need to track down, by the way. Like, you need to hunt for them. You stand in the middle of the road looking for a orange or yellow reflective vest, and 9 times out of 10, you run to an EcoGash guy first, and you're going to get selling airtime first, thinking it's them, and they get pissed off.
Yeah.
And then turn around and start looking for the next person.
Now you're wasting my time. Now I've been here longer than I need to be because it's on the way to go get lunch.
he's the one who's doing that whole sector, right? So he's walking around the building. So you can shade it up. Dara, hey. Nah, I'm going to just keep walking, bro.
Bro.
And you're like, when you pay, more day you need
chaos.
It's just an imperfect system.
Chaos.
And bro, I can imagine you're trying to get used to culture shock to a country where things kind of sort of worked, to a system where, I mean, if it's working, it's a good day. No, if it's working, it's a miracle. Good day.
Dude, it is. No. It has been shocking to be able to just see how things just... I'm still trying to understand how things work in the midst of all of this. Like, I keep saying chaos because that's just what it is in the midst of all of this. But, you know, the bright side of that, or at least I guess the silver lining of that, is just I ran away from the doom and gloom that is Canada's winter.
Ah, yes.
Bruh, no, that I'm happy about. Because, no, it's like... I left there and we hadn't seen the sun. The sun comes out and says hello through the clouds for like 5 minutes a day, if you're lucky. Otherwise, you don't see the sun where I was at. You don't see the sun for like 10 days, bro. So I'm happy about that. And like just being able, most importantly, see you and see all the people that I hadn't seen, the fam. I hadn't seen the fam in like 10 years, man. So it was a trip being able to see everybody and be able to nicely like... Like, me and my brothers got lit one day and we're just, you know, listening to all the old music that we used to listen to. It was just a dope-ass time being able to do that, you know, and seeing my mom as well. And just, you know, although as well, you just get thrown into the whole family dysfunction, which I'm not going to get into. Yeah, it's just some bullshit. But, you know, it's all of that and being able to just take in, like, I tweeted it as well. I was like, yo, I forgot how huge this land was. I forgot how huge this land was that they built this house on. And, you know, I was like just being able to kind of see all these palm trees and all these trees that they had planted. And this whole backyard is just an ecosystem of its own, you know. And that was just a whole experience for me, you know, being able to come back to that. So that's really the plus side, is just being back on African soil again after 10 years. It's not to say that Canada is whatever, but at some point the cultural differences just, it begins to show up, you know, and it begins to kind of, it was becoming so hard to ignore, you know, the fact that I was just in the diaspora, you know, it became so hard to ignore. And it wasn't like I didn't want to come back on these circumstances, kind of things kind of just, you know, moved in that direction where I had to come back. But it is, you know, despite all the dysfunction and chaos, it is really good to be back.
I agree with you. When I came back in 2019, as much as I was knowing that I'm coming back to an imperfect system, having to start pretty much from scratch, I get why they say home is where the heart is. I get it now.
Yeah, like, it hits you.
Yeah, like it's not even that you feel comfortable. It's easier. It's just like the familiarity is, you can adapt to things a lot faster than you can to the culture shock of going to many other places.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with more traveling as I've done since I've come back, it's less and less. My adaption time is a lot quicker.
Mm.
But when you come back home, it's like, yeah, I know what's going to happen. I can predict. Mm. And that's not to say like I'm afraid of risk or, you know, packing up and leaving. It's just like, there's a feeling that you can't quantify that hits you when you get home.
Mm.
And for me, that was the whole thing of like, yeah, I know this place is imperfect in the millionth sense of the term, like, but it's nice to be in a place where you recognize landmarks, where you don't have to begin to create associations, where your mind doesn't have to work so fast, where you don't worry, am I going to get jumped? Am I going to get robbed? I mean, you get robbed in Zim, but the chance of you getting robbed in Zim, I mean, depends where you are.
I think you have a higher chance of getting scammed in Zim than getting robbed.
I mean, you lose money.
You lose money either way. But yeah, I know. I get you. I can't explain it, but it's like when you're outside of, at least when I was in Canada, there was this whole, you know, stranger in a familiar place kind of feeling, where it's like I've been there for like 10 years, so I knew certain places, you know, both cities that I lived in, I was there for at least 5 years. So I knew everything was like kind of like home, but it never felt like home, you know, and you walk into certain places and you always feel how foreign you are, you know?
Yep.
It's like, it was always like that. And there's people like TJ's there and he took to Canada from the moment he got there. He was a local. I think by 3 years in, that dude was a local. He was already, yeah. He was already a local. And I, 3 years in, was thinking about coming back to Zim. That's why I came back in 2012, because I was like, I got to come back to Zim at some point. So I think I've always had 1 foot in and 1 foot out the door. And I've just been waiting for, you know, I wanted to be able to come back to Zim with the ability to leave whenever the fuck I wanted. You know, but things didn't kind of work out that way. They, you know, this is the card, the hand that I'm dealt. But it's, you know, I remember joking to you and saying like, yo, when you, where I was in Canada as well, just, it's like you go, you know, you go your whole life, you go like a whole year, some, no, a whole month.
Yeah.
It'd be like that, man. And you see Munumtema, you're like, it'd be like a real sighting. And here it's like, you know, here it's like one of them, everyone's like, ah, okay. You know, and being able, like, also for me, like, I went so long, Zingatarishona.
Yes.
For a moment, there was a time where I was like, you know, when I was rapping Shona with someone on the phone when I was in Canada, and I'm like, ah, Natukangano.
Yeah.
And you had to, like, remind yourself all these different things.
Yeah.
And then, so that's been dope, just being able to say, ah, Dave, should you say, you know, just random shit like that, being able to do that you couldn't do, going from it. How's it going? Hey. You know, hey, how's it going? Hey, yeah, good. How are you doing? Should I say, those just tiny things. People, you know, VZ, I know you get it. But yeah, man, it's and also just being able to just be like, whenever I see Warungu here, I'm like, because, you know, they hide. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They went to ground. Like, what is actually rarer is seeing a white person in the CBD in Harare. That is the rarest sight, because the way Harare has, the way the CBD has devolved. I mean, the government now is on a hill somewhere in Westgate, because they're like, you know, fuck this shit. We can't deal with your shit. You niggas are animals. We are leaving.
They're on Mount Olympus.
It's up there, man. Like, if you go down at Old Mazuwa Road, you'll see the new parliament building on the top. They were like, literally, we cannot deal with the CBD anymore. Yeah. Like, to the point where I feel like the motorcade was no longer being respected as it was back in the day. Because she guys like, my guy,
imagine being in the motorcade with your CBD and they're like, yeah, this is the back saying, Imi, Dara. They don't respect you.
I remember there was a time where Samora Machel was so backed up that the police who came before the motorcade were trying to organize to create room, because it was coming through at rush hour. And it was understandable that they couldn't really get pissed at anyone, because they're like, but what, like, it is what it is. So they pissed off and they went there, and the white people kind of did that first, because now if you see how Harare works, you don't see any head offices in the CBD anymore. All the head offices are now in like Old Mutuals in Mount Pleasant, Emerald Hill, Bank ABCs in Mount Pleasant. CBZ moved as well out of the CBD, as far as I can remember. So all businesses have just left the CBD, to a point where what those buildings we used to grow up with being, you know, offices and stuff are now malls. Literally, like these, which I know one day, oh, no wig. I'm not going to string that, but which I know no wig. Some of those buildings where we used to go, like barbers and Greatermans.
Yeah.
I remember telling my girlfriend this, I'm like, yo.
Greatermans. Hey.
I remember driving past First Street and I was like, you know, back in the days, kids, we used to have Christmas breakfast at barbers. And we used to go, you know, that whole seeing Santa Claus and stuff at barbers and then go shop at Greatermans. And department stores were like, I know it's very middle class. I'm sorry. It is what it is. Anyway, that is no longer there now.
Serious?
They're no malls. It's like literally they broke it up into little malls and whatnot, and their little stores and shops. It's like everything in the CBD is quickly becoming a flea market. The point that you're like, there are places where you're like, hey, I remember what this used to look like. At First Street used to be the darling of Harare.
Yeah.
Dad. There's a nigga who's in First Street now, a preacher who I've seen every day there. Nigga does not get hoarse. His voice is fine. He keeps preaching. And we sat there and tried to listen to my homie Ed this one time. Like, you know what? This nigga's not saying sense.
Yeah.
And you see people like collecting around him.
Yeah.
The fountains that were there no longer work. I mean, it just got to the point where the strain on the CBD itself could no longer handle the demand that people were putting onto it.
Shit.
And companies just left. And remember, for companies, you're trying to create an experience for your customers. So you can't say, yeah, just hang on, I'm down. And they go be like, imagine getting a delegation from God knows where. And you're trying to navigate traffic, hooting, you know, shouting at people.
My way.
Dealing with them shigas. We don't know what lanes are. Combis who do their own thing. And you're dealing with drivers who, like Mbingas. You can clearly see Mbinga driving. They don't indicate.
No.
They do not. No. They're like, hey, if you scratch, you scratch. It is what it is. We'll sit and talk about it. But
ah, bro.
and you see your first time drivers, your L plate niggas, worst people in the world. Mshikashikas are better because at least at some point they start moving. L plates, especially class two. I saw this lady in the class. I'm like, where are you going to drive a haulage vehicle? No sexism involved, but where? Where? Are you getting a class two for the sake of getting a class two?
Yo.
And this got worse when I got vaccinated because I was so this lady was vaccinating me was like, she got her class one. So she took my driver's license as my ID, right?
Yeah.
It's like, urumurume paji in the class four. I'm like, and from where? Right. It's like, in the class one. I'm like, okay, but you're a nurse. But I'm trying to drive her in. Like, I want to understand, the math is not mathing.
Fam.
Bruh, L plates, particularly on tests in town, you don't want to make someone flunk.
No.
But at some point, you start hooting.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, did you want to do that again, guys? Did you want to do that again?
Don't worry, that's not going to be because I had school anymore.
I can't. I physically cannot deal with your nonsense. And it's always heartwarming when those L-plates step on that line in town and they're on the test. And I'm like,
yeah,
you failed. You failed because you're slow in the fast lane. This is God coming back at you and saying, Wanguka, you held up someone who's late. We held up people who are late.
Yeah.
And then 4th Street. 4th Street was always Jambanje.
Always. Nah, that's always been there. Yeah.
Although there's a place called Jambanje in Shtungiza that reinvented the word Jambanje. However, 4th Street now.
Crazy mother.
I mean, roadboard used to be a nightmare back in the day. Roadboard now is like the sensory overload. I mean, I'm just going to drop you in town and let you walk.
Ah, Inzwamanji. Sensory overload.
Dude, everyone's selling something. Someone thinks you're going to Rua. No flex, but do you sincerely believe we're going in the same direction?
Fam, no. Zimbabwe is comedy, honestly. It's comedy. I'm not saying I'm looking forward to it, but when I do, I know I'm going to just be frustrated as hell, but comedy, enjoying the comedy of it all at the same time, because that's all I've done. Whenever I've driven, I'm like, yo, I could die on these roads, but this is hella funny.
Oh yeah. Like Nasi Panana Tungana on, what's it called? What's that road? St. King George Road near Avondale.
Yeah.
I'm dipping out. I was coming this side. And then, this fit and this vits end to end. But you had time. we're going less than 60. Uh-huh. You all had time to see.
Right.
Only to realize one chick was on the phone trying to turn right, did not indicate. Homeboy behind him thought she was still moving. And remember, you have to wait for the police to come. So now you're putting on your hazards because you can't like move the cars until the police come and inspect and draw the scene or whatever.
Right.
And you see people behind them getting frustrated, like, yo, it's a Friday, guys. it's a you chose
what are we doing?
The worst road to have an accident on a Friday.
What are we doing?
And now they backed up traffic all up King George. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, cool. I mean,
which I can imagine that when people have an accident, to clear that up takes an age.
I mean,
because we're and then who do you call? And then
the police first need to come, which is annoying. And what about when they sort up? Literally, when we're going to we're empty Tory.
That's how broke the police departments are.
When they come, it's like, oh, it's like a chicha eating up. Wank, wank, wank. You can see. It's an end-to-end collision.
It's right here.
And then you start explaining the story. They start drawing. They block part of the road. And they start taking pictures for insurance. And then Uruba third-party insurance. Uruba Purupachi insurance. Mota inakutere. Why not the whole thing? Because you can't get paid. Because that car inakutere. And yo, bruh. It's like, I went through the same situation with my little sister when she got, you know, sideswiped by some moron.
Mm.
And I'm just like, I said that. I'm like, this is mind-numbing. First of all, I was woken up from a lovely nap.
Yeah.
It's an 8, you know, 8 p.m. when you're about to sleep.
So you're already irritable when you're getting there.
I'm like, your sister's involved in an accident. I'm like, is she okay? She can't see her. Like, at the police there. I'm like, yeah, where am I going?
Mm.
It's like, how's the car? When he said that, I'm like, fuck.
Yeah.
That, first of all, those niggas should stop wearing shorts. Police people need respect. That's an H core. The government needs to do something. These are not colonial times. Okay, first of all. Second, this is the pride of Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Pananema uniform. Because I'm on a uniform, I'm going to fit the baby. When you face the point, you're going to get going to call her white. But uniform, they're gray.
You've been studying this thing, come Dara. I don't know what Papa said. Okay, my one Kumba.
Dara. I'm sitting there, I'm feeling sorry for the cop, right? I'm like, and she got sideswiped, but in a bar. And you can imagine, the bar guys were drunk now trying to mitigate. The, what are you trying to intercede? Guys, what are you trying to intercede?
Yeah.
Cool. We do the thing. I'm trying to talk to the people. Imagine trying to hold off drunk people. Nice. I'm trying to explain to the police at the same time. I got to the point where I was like, 2 hours later, so I had to take her to the hospital because she hit her head. So just hoping she, you know, she goes on through concussion protocols and whatnot to make sure she's fine.
Right.
I come back. They're still debating with the police.
Someone.
Some guy pulls out his hand card. Hey, did you say I'm going to go to the police? Aren't you all on the same side?
Yeah.
I'm like, you learn something new every day.
The guy was like, I don't care.
Keep it moving. Then my brother said, I went to a police station. I think I was on, no, the guy who hit them was the one who went to drop them off because it was late. I think it was around midnight, 12, close to midnight. Or at midnight just after. And you could see, Guti, upon a plan to get to the police station, upon a plan, filing, whatnot. You know how long it took for all that process to be complete?
Mm.
Month and a half.
Shit.
For it to get to like insurance, for the car to start getting fixed. Shit.
See?
So, I feel for you coming from a country where things sort of worked to a country where
it's a good day.
It's a really, really good day.
It's a good day. No, I know Zim is an extreme sport on a whole, man. On a whole.
You thought I was joking.
Y'all underplayed it, man. Y'all underplayed it. It's an extreme sport, but I can't wait to kind of explore it either way. I really can't. It's going to be fun kind of, you know, getting used to things again and seeing, you know, I haven't seen everybody yet. That's a whole mission in and of itself, but I'll get there slowly but surely. But, you know, it's going to be fun being able to see. Because when I left, yeah, I had a different perspective of I'd had, all I knew was Zim, and I was tired of it. I wanted to see outside of Zim. And I did that. You know, where I was at in Canada, we was able to kind of travel around Canada a bit and see different places. So, you know, but there's always been this overwhelming feeling to come back and kind of explore Zimbabwe through a mature, you know, perspective and being able to see just so many different places. Eventually, you know, we're going to hit the road and get to like, you know, all the landmarks and then the tourist destinations that I hear, you know, Lake Chivero is just a local one. And then eventually, you know, hit Kariba and then somehow one day get to Vic Falls. That's a whole mission, but even Mutare, the Eastern Highlands, like we didn't, I underappreciated those when I was a kid, but I eventually get there. So that's going to be fun. I definitely can't wait to do that. Anyway, moving on quickly to sports, but we still have the light here.
Oh, United.
Nah, this one, my one.
Ah, boy.
Yeah. United. We are all of a sudden not giving us hard palpitations every week. I mean, they are, but you know, we're now confident. It's a different vibe.
Yeah.
You go in, you know, with calm because bold man is doing his thing, man.
I am happy that there's, I think the problem with us was culture. There was no one who could come and build a proper culture.
Yeah.
And people trying to riff off what Fergie had done, but like when you walk in there, build your own culture. So Ten Hag, I'm happy that he is able to walk into that team and he's brought the people he wants to bring into the team, the right mentalities, and you can see the way things have changed. Because it's kind of like back in the day where if we're losing, there's a chance you can watch until the 90th minute.
Mm.
Back in the day, Moyes, Van Gaal, I'm direct for 1-0 down.
Finds that's it.
Mazoka, you know, you would even be more depressed that you stayed for the 90th minute and they score another one rather than to see it on SuperSport Blitz.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, we got 10. But hey, bro.
At this point, yeah, like there's so many times where it's like our 1-0 down. Ah. Like the Leeds game.
Mm.
The Leeds game at Old Trafford where we were 1-0 down and then 2-0 down. Then I was like, you know, you want to give up, but then we equalize and we respond and you're like, oh, we're different. And the other thing as well was that just the fact that, you know, we've, in all the years, if one main guy went down, then you're like, until that guy comes back, well, I'm at 1,000.
Yep.
Now, you know, multiple guys have been missing for different moments at a time and the shit just kept moving.
Yep.
Team kept winning, team kept grinding on results, getting results, playing well. The system doesn't change. Somebody comes in, they know what to do, they step up, you know. And to be able to kind of, you know, like, who the hell has the balls to say Luke Shaw at centre-back against Man City?
Barcelona,
man. right?
And you're like,
yeah.
And he plays well in that position.
Yeah.
And we're not doubting it. We're like, okay, cool.
Cool.
And it's a vibe. Let's see what's going to happen.
Yeah. And it just, it somehow works. Like Casemiro goes out for three games and we're like, you know, could have won the first game, should won the second game. We're going to see what we're doing against Leicester. But it's like, yo, we're surviving. Even though like that guy is a big, big part of what we're doing, you know. So that's good. That's good. Quickly, just for the boy VZ, Arsenal.
Listen, man, if Arsenal bottle this, North London has lost all my respect. You and Tottenham are the same thing. And VZ, now I can look in the face and say, you and Spurs, you and the Spuds are exactly the same thing. Because, guys, how on. Like, I love everything Arteta's doing. Mm. More so that he snitched on City. I hope he was the one who snitched on City.
I have no doubt.
I'll be so happy. I was watching the convo in the group while I was at work and I'm like, yeah, Team Arsenal didn't get Unakiru. Nick and VZ seem to be enjoying themselves.
Yeah, no, they're not.
Again, it's a culture thing with Arsenal. Mm. I think Arteta took time that 3 years, or 2 years, or 3 years, whatever,
yeah,
to build the culture of the team. Made a lot of sense. Now you can see the rewards. And even in the City game when, was it Tomiyasu? I forgot the guy's name. When he let that pass go,
yeah.
And then De Bruyne scored. And then you see Odegaard running up, pulling up his chin like, bruh, listen, head up.
Yeah.
The game's not over.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
not in, it just, it's in your head. Just, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of thing is the kind of Arsenal we were used to when growing up in school. And we used to dread coming on Monday morning to see those guys.
All of them. Waxing lyrical about all that. Yeah. No, it's a mental thing. It really is. Because it reminds me of 08-09. Remember that 08-09 season? Yeah, yeah. With Man United, and we were like so inconsistent that whole year, but we were still good. All the metrics said we were good. We looked good. We were still a championship team, but it was like, it was the end of that team cycle. Mm. You could tell, and they were just laboring through, and we were chasing Liverpool for the longest time. And it wasn't until Fergie got in Benitez's head, you know, at the right time, and his team famously, you know, let it slip. And after that, you know, they collapsed. And so I was telling, that's what I was saying in the group chat whilst I was so enjoying watching you niggas really get worked up. Like, I know what it feels like,
yeah.
But it's just a mental thing, man. It's a mental thing. Pep and City, they've been through this before, man. Mm. They've chased, you know, teams before. They chased Liverpool 1 year, you know, so they've done this shit before. For them, they just know the grind. They know when to kick in. They know when to kick into gear. Pep knows how to shake shit up. It wasn't a coincidence that he was dropping people for like 6 weeks.
Yeah.
That was all just him coaching his team through all these tough times. And for Arsenal, it's like, yo, look, the 8-point lead wasn't going to last long. You're just not built like that.
No.
But at some point, you know, City was going to come and catch up to you and say, can you go the distance? And so
catch up, they did.
It's a mental thing. It's a mental thing for them. And so long as they don't panic and they respond, they'll be able to I think they can see it through. I still have that confidence. But, you know, it's tough. It's not easy, bro. You thought you were going to sail through. They thought they were going to be Liverpool and sail through with 10 points for the rest of the year. It's not like that, man.
But
it's not like that. It's not like
it's great. Nick and VZ have never been the, we're going to win the league. We're going to. Nah.
Yeah, they know. They're pain. How was that? Pain. Pain has taught them well.
They've never been.
Pain has taught them
the
well.
The type of guys to do that because they know that the league is fickle.
Yeah.
Can happen.
Yeah.
Injuries can happen.
Yeah.
Although they're building an interesting squad. But they understand that they could lose this as much as they could win this.
They could,
which
yeah.
Which is nice. But if they win the league, let's say this year, that might change next year when they're like, they expect to do the you know, a repeat.
Yeah.
And that could change. Like Liverpool fans, when they won that first one, they were happy, happy still, you know, hits the ground. And then the cockiness started coming up with that championship.
They're
like, yo, guys, relax.
Just chill.
It ain't that deep. Now what are they doing? Language is 7th, 8th in the league.
Yeah.
Their fans are insufferable. Calling for Klopp to be, I'm like, why would you call for Klopp to be fired? Like,
yeah.
It's deeper than that. It's not just a simple case of people not performing. It's just they haven't invested in the right
places.
No, they haven't. Like the midfield, I remember, was it 2016? I was like, man, the one thing missing from this Liverpool team is a decent midfield.
Yeah,
and
it is.
They messed up with Naby Keita at the time. I mean, was going to be a baller, but
it didn't happen, right? Yeah.
So Naby Keita, and then they got Thiago Alcantara, again, a player who's iffy when it comes to his fitness. Brilliant football. But like fitness-wise, he has issues. And Henderson stepped up in a big way.
Because now he looks
like a proper, you know, holding midfielder. And he's a captain, whatever. But they never built around that to the point that you're confident in the fact that Liverpool have a, you know, a world-class midfield. They've never really had a world-class midfield.
No.
It's James Milner, Henderson, and whoever they would put in the third spot to play there.
Yeah.
And that was always the Achilles heel. Because again, look at Pep, the way he chops and changes that midfield. And going out to get Rodri, Calvin Phillips, Bernardo went from the right to the middle. Gundogan as well. You're not even talking about Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah.
So the anatomy of the team, defensively, they're high. I mean, cool. Midfield, problem. Up top, they're better. But Darwin Nunes is not the striker he is simply because he does not have the service.
Dude, like the idea, you know, that, I think Klopp is the one that said it. Like, look, they've been spoiled. They're a little entitled. They just think that, oh, we can do this every year. It's not like that. It's not like that. And you can blame Klopp and the team and the recruitment system. I think there's a lot of blame that can go there for not recognizing the fact that they needed to get younger in midfield. You know, like they could have spent that 70 million on a midfielder.
Yep.
That they did sign Gakpo. And it's not to say Gakpo isn't a top player or a decent talent. He is, you know, but that wasn't the position they needed to prioritize. Especially knowing they have Luis Diaz there and they have some of them, Fana, who's there as well, and they have Diogo Jota who can play across there. They needed to prioritize a midfielder at the midfield. That's why they were trying to get Tchouaméni, but then they whatever. That's why now they're in the lead to get Jude Bellingham because they understand, okay, we need to go get one.
The midfielder they need right now because they need to build like what United did, build from the holding midfield position. Like
yeah, they need a holding midfielder for sure.
We've got Casemiro, and then you build around that. So you now start building depth in that position. But to be fair, once Henderson's time comes in terms of career-wise, it's going to be a position he needs to address at some point.
No, yeah, for sure. Lined up,
but they need to get someone world-class to keep, you know, what they have going. Fullbacks as well. I mean, you can't have, you know, Alexander Arnold and Robertson's a fantastic. I mean, they're two very good attacking, fullbacks.
Yeah.
However, you need variation in that position, and we saw that with Ten Hag. You even see that with Arteta as well. The rotation of the position. Sometimes you see Wan-Bissaka playing even though Dalot's fit. Because Wan-Bissaka, as Bambi on ice as he is, he will get you those blocks. He
drunken master.
He will get you to the point where you will get a block. However, if you become predictable, like what Liverpool has obviously become now, where they're a predictable team. As long as you, I mean, I don't want to compare Salah to Ashley Young, but as long as you cut the channel off his strong foot, it's better.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy, but it's better.
Mm.
It's not like Messi, where even if you put him on the right, he's still going to cook you.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
But Liverpool don't have that variation in attack. And again, letting Sadio Mane go where they could have paid
that
him.
That was some petty shit. I mean, that was the wrong person to get rid of.
He could play the 10. Right now, you could go to a 4-2-3-1, let him play the 10.
Mm.
And he could do it successfully, and that DS kid can play the league. Because that kid's good. It's
very,
just,
yeah. DS is very good.
He's like, he's the same as Salah. Cut and shoot. He's not really, or Salah can create as well, but I'm saying it's not really, there's no variation to their play. I mean, United, we're not better, to be fair. We know what's going to happen. Rashford start on the left or on the right, and go up top, and then work off to go to the bench. Mm. Even though at this point, we're just saying, you know, why don't you just start Rashford up top and see what happens?
Yeah.
Sancho's back.
Yeah.
I mean, Garnacho seems like he kind of is getting there.
You'll get there, Langer, yeah.
Who is raw as hell, but you know.
That one should have gone on loan. I don't know why we didn't send him on loan. You should have really gone on loan. But no, we don't. Liverpool, their problem is the fact that they just didn't evolve. They didn't freshen up their team. Pep is the one that said it. Fergie used to do it all the time. You got to freshen shit up.
Mm.
You can't keep the same team over and over and over. It's a Klopp thing. He did it at Dortmund, you know, and you'd think that at Liverpool, they would kind of get ahead of that and be able to kind of, you know, avoid those mistakes, but they've found themselves in the same mistakes where they have an archaic, very not archaic, but a squad that's like, you know, like you signed Thiago at 31 and that was okay, that's fine, but then you didn't go sign anyone else. You kept doing the same shit over and over again. And so, you know, that's, if they get new owners and they get new investment, they got to be able to just avoid that. It's not firing Klopp. That's stupid. Klopp is the most, he's like, since Julio, he's the most kind of the one that can, you know, that you believe. He's not even believe. He actually won you titles. You won your Champions League. You won your Premier League. So obviously, fucking obviously, he is going to, he's the man for y'all. There's no way you can get rid of that shit.
Is that an owl?
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, man. I told you, this whole place is its own ecosystem. But yeah, there's an owl that just chills here.
Yeah, well, bro. I like owls, by the way. Anzimuroi. Yeah. Don't want to be, I get it. It's a fascinating creature.
No, I feel you.
Anyway, Super Bowl.
Yeah, look. Look, man, first and foremost, I hope that Eagles fans feel that shit for the rest of their life. Like, I hope so. This is for Brady and Super Bowl 52. Fuck y'all. But to be honest, man, they played a good game. They played a very good game. And, you know, it comes down to just a game. It's a game of inches. They always say that. And going into it, I always felt like, look, the Eagles had the team that they had everything. They had a great O-line, a great D-line, a solid, you know, solid secondary, a great run game, great receiver, quarterback who could theoretically make every throw. So I felt like, okay, if they play their game and play to their strengths, they'll win. But there was also the fact that Pat Mahomes and them, everybody was looking at Pat Mahomes, and because they didn't have the star-studded team, they're like, but the whole year, what they had learned since getting rid of Tyreek, and it really happened when Tyreek was there a year before, they learned how to be a normal team.
Yep.
They learned how to be a normal team again. Like, they weren't just, you know, fuck it, Tyreek is up there somewhere, or Kelsey's free somewhere. It, you know, now they had to scheme drives that lasted 6 minutes.
The dink and dunks, man.
Yeah, and Pat, exactly. And Pat's fucking up his ankle, you know, put him in that situation where he didn't have to be Superman all the time.
Yep.
He had to stay in the pocket and get that thing out of there in 2 seconds. He had to make sure his O-line had to make sure that he was safe to make those throws. They couldn't cheat the process anymore.
Yep.
And that's how you win Super Bowls. I've watched Brady do this shit time and time again. I know what the shit looks like. I saw Manning do it. I saw Russell Wilson. I've seen every Super Bowl champion do this shit. There's a process that you have to learn how to do. And, you know, the Chiefs spent 2 years trying to get back here to the Super Bowl. They spent 2 years trying to win that shit, trying to get back, trying to win it. They came back 1 year. They were arrogant about it. They got taught a lesson by Brady and the Bucks. The year next year, they got taught a lesson by the Bengals. And so they've been slowly kind of learning that it's not, you can't cheat the process of how to be a good team and how to win it. Because not every game, not the greatest shows on the football field don't always win the championships.
True.
That happens like maybe 3 years. I can probably think about three teams that were the greatest show in football that won the championship. Everyone else kind of had to struggle their way through it.
Yeah.
So that by itself was a lesson, you know, where I was like, yeah, okay, the Eagles, you know. But they put up a fight, man.
Yeah.
They put up a fight.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the holding goal. I think it was Jalen Hurts' fumble that killed it.
Yeah.
I think that gave the Chiefs momentum. Because Philly had them reeling up until that point. And to Jalen Hurts' credit, man, he played a hell of a game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be a Jalen Hurts hater. I mean, there are enough people who last season were looking at Jalen Hurts and saying, was he worth the investment that the Eagles had put around him?
Yeah.
But this season he came and showed that he's not going to be a quote-unquote Dak Prescott clone.
Yeah.
He's good. I mean, you know, he's good, but there are doubts around, you know, can he take a team all the way?
Yeah.
And they're the longest win streak this year until they lost. I think they had the best record this year. And him talent-wise. I mean, exactly. His QBRs were always consistently good.
Always.
And I mean, he's mobile. Like, everyone wants a mobile quarterback.
And he can make those throws.
And he can throw.
And he can make those throws.
I mean, I would hazard to say Lamar Jackson light, where he's got the mobility. He can make the run. He's like Lamar Jackson, but with a running game with receivers. He's not just, you know, throwing to Andrews or whatever as Lamar
Jackson. They do Lamar so dirty over there, bro.
But it is what it is. But I think this is a lesson for him to go to the Super Bowl and lose.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to be a Cam Newton situation where he doesn't come back again. I think the team is too good.
Yeah.
Not to be a problem for the next like 3 or 4 years.
Me too, yeah.
Cam Newton, that one time that he did, you know, get up in the Super Bowl and lose, it was what it was. And he never really had the team around him to then. I mean, Cam also is a personality, so that might have played a bit of a role in it.
Yeah, that was just there's a whole bunch of shit that would happen after that you could just tell they weren't getting back. Yeah, but I feel that.
I'm impressed that I was watching the Kelsey's podcast after the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And like the praise they gave Pat, like he understood the fact that he could no longer be Superman.
Yeah.
He had to learn
how to. Game. Yeah.
Like you're saying, he couldn't cheat the process. And I respect that. Because some talents are hard to like retune to be like, you know. But the fact that guy's so coachable and that he learned, you have to do the Mac Jones plays every now and again. You have to, you know, at least
check down. Yeah,
exactly.
You got to find the check down. Keep and then the going. Play, the coordinators as well, knowing that, okay, we don't have the talent that can speed their way past everyone.
Yeah.
So we have to scheme people open. And you tell Pat, okay, this is the scheme. This is what's happening. There's the open play. That's the open play. Find your man.
I mean, even if he ad-libbed really more reasonably this season.
Exactly. It wasn't just Superman shit. It was ad-libbing within the scheme of, so, okay, that's my route. That's the first read, second read, third read, and he's going through his reads and making the right play.
Also, gotta apologize to Nick Wright. Because Nick Wright said Tyreek leaving might be the best thing for the Chiefs.
It was. And it was. It
turned out to be the right thing for the Chiefs because it was. They became a better team than with Tyreek there. Because Tyreek was like your Devontae Adams to your Rodgers. He's the guy who then, you know, gives you the outlet that you need. He's always going to be where you
they
need
became the Patriots. I was telling Bizzle this. They became the Patriots. The Patriots, the last 10 years, the reason why they won the Super Bowl was because they had Brady and they had Gronk and they schemed the entire offense around those two all pro players. And when you have those two players, all you need to then find is talent. Okay, you have to have a great O-line, check. You have to have a great running game, check. And they were able to then get a great O-line, get Pacheco, who was a great runner. They had Kelsey, who would be able to then take attention from the defensive scheme. And then from there, you find receivers. You still need talent. You still need guys who can make plays in the wide receiver. They had Juju Schuster who would make plays. They had Valdez-Scandling, who was making plays. They had another, I forgot another receiver they had. So they became a team that had two all-pro players, an O-line that worked their butt off, a running game that was dope, good enough, and then they had receivers that were good enough.
Yeah.
Not crazy, not talented, not all-pro, but good enough. And then when you have that, and you then have the genius offensive mind that is Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid, you have a solution. Yeah. You have a solution. You have a solution to anything that gets thrown your way. And instead of being this globetrotter team, whatever, those don't win, man. Those win rarely. It's like once every 10 years they win. They don't win all the time. They get humbled because it's not that easy. You can absolutely scheme against that because you cheat the process. Pat wants to go and do a Superman move because like, fuck it, Tyreek Hill's open somewhere. Now he's like, okay, Valdez can't get like that, so I gotta go to the next read. I gotta find the open read. They're focusing on Kelsey. I gotta find that read. And that's how you do it. And that's how Jalen Hurts was doing it with his, the way their scheme works as well. And so, yeah, Nick was right. And I remember seeing that shit being like, I didn't even know that was a thing when Tyreek left. Because that people were like, oh, they're not gonna be the same anymore. But I was like, nah, they've when Tyreek was there, this last year there, they had changed. Their whole offense had changed. They were different. They were dunking. They were like, you know, doing, you know, very methodical drives. And when Tyreek left, nothing was going to change. They were just going to swap out for Tyreek for someone else who was going to play more, you know, conservative. But Pat had already gotten into that process of knowing, I'm not Superman.
Yeah.
I got to fucking trust this, the scheme. I got to trust the game plan.
I mean, Kelsey leaving would have been the big one.
Exactly.
Because Kelsey would have been like Brady without Gronk.
Exactly.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
You need your receiving tight end. And also, people, I think the conception I had about Travis Kelsey was that he was more of a sort of a fifth, fourth receiver than he is. But his blocking is amazing.
Yeah. No, like, he stepped that up. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it got really good to the point. I was like, this guy can do all the shit, right? Like, It really be like that. Like I was super impressed with just that development and how he was able to consolidate and protect Pat in the pocket. I'm like, I mean, I was watching one side of the game. I'm sorry, but like I'm watching the defensive side as well. And I'm like, alright, cool, bro. It makes sense. But I mean, for Jalen Hurts, I think it's Eli when I'm more sure you'll be back. It's not that bad.
And the NFC is not that great as well.
I mean, you lost to an all-time great.
Yeah, it's no shame. And you took him, like, they had to come back on you.
Yeah.
Like, you were dominating them that bad that they had to come back on you. So, they Golden State Warriored you, but, you know, that's the way it is.
It is what it is.
It is. That's who they are, man. That's the Chiefs. They're the Golden State Warriors of the NFL. But, you know, it's a lesson that I think Jalen Hurts and Sirianni and that whole Eagles team will learn and take that it took literally you didn't get pammed, you lost by a field goal. They had to come back on you. Y'all had them up. You know what I mean? And you can look at it like the Falcons and the Falcons lost by this and that, but it's not. Y'all had them on the ropes and it's a game of inches.
It was a possession. They literally lost
one
by possession.
Yeah, by one possession. All you needed was one possession and you couldn't get it. And that's the Super Bowl, man. I've seen Brady, not even just Brady, like Mahomes will tell you. That's how he lost once. You know, Mahomes got pammed, but look, you know, Manning lost the Super Bowl like that. A lot of people have lost. The Super Bowls are hard to win.
Yeah.
It's hard to win. It's hard to get there. It's even harder to win. And the lessons that they learned from here, it's harder to get back too. It might take you 2 years to get back, but, you know, you got to be able to learn those lessons that every play matters. Take care of all this shit. It all matters. And when you're they're in the window now that they've got there, they're in that window.
Yeah.
And so you can't take that window for granted. Like Pat and them have been in this window for 4 or 5 years. You can't take that window for granted. Even if you stumble and you get to the AFC Championship and you lose, stay in that pocket.
But again, it's like the scary thing is like the amount of teams that are getting better. So the Bills, as much as we might say Allen runs is the running back, so is the quarterback, they're going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
The Bengals are going to get better.
Oh, yeah.
The Jaguars are going to get better because, I mean, Trevor Lawrence is not slowing down. I mean, this season he was already pretty impressive. That team they're building around him is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Chiefs aren't going anywhere as a team. San Francisco is a problem. Pretty, they're a quarterback problem away. They're literally the only team that... I remember, was it Cowherd was saying, "It's we always, in every offseason, talk about San Francisco's quarterback situation.
They just need to have a stable quarterback who can survive a season. That's all.
But the weapons.
That's all.
The
yeah. Weapons. They're a scheme. The scheme.
Dude.
It's so good. It's so good. And they just need a quarterback who can stay healthy throughout everything.
And like, we can say the big moments. Because remember, Jimmy G is not the guy.
No.
As much as niggas might want to say he is,
he's no, not the guy. No, he was a game manager. Maybe one of the greatest game manager of all time, but he's a game manager.
Jimmy G is what people thought Brady was.
Mm.
So I think if they can, if that the kid they've got, Lance, Trey Lance, if he ends up being the guy and can use all these weapons, plus his own mobility, I honestly believe that they'll become a better team for it. However, the pool of talent keeps growing because if what's it called, Lamar Jackson, and they sort out the situation and they get a little bit more talent around him, at least a decent enough running back or another receiver or something, they're automatically a problem now because he's got two people to aim for. So as much as the Eagles are in this window, the teams aren't going to get worse. Miami as well. Like Tua, and it's working, it's getting there. It wasn't going to happen overnight, but I mean, it's getting there.
Mm.
We don't know what's going to happen with the Raiders after Derek Carr left.
That's
who's
true.
Gonna fill that slot.
They're probably going to draft someone, I think, but yeah.
I mean, if they can get, let's say Rodgers, for example, comes back from his kumbaya and says, you know, I'm leaving, whatever, and he goes and fills that slot. That's a really, he's got, he's got a team to work with.
Got a team.
I'm afraid that the Eagles might.
No, it never gets easier. Yeah. And they lost two coaches as well, DC and OC, I think. So it's not going to get easier. It's not going to get easy. That's why I said, like, you know, you're going to stumble. You might not get back next year. I doubt you're going to get back next year. You might not get back the year after that. But you have to trust the fact that, okay, we got a solid foundation here. Let's build on that. And let's make sure that we remain competitive no matter what we're doing. And then from there, you can find your way. Because their division is not going to get easier as well. The Giants are back.
Yeah.
You know, the Giants are doing their thing. I don't know what's going to happen to the Commanders. The Cowboys, they'll always be a little bit of a threat, even though they're just a funny team. But, you know, like, yeah, you're right. It never gets easier. That's why it's always harder to get back to the Super Bowl.
Actually, I forgot once about you the get Giants. Saquon Barkley, when fit, Jesus
Christ. Yeah, no, they're a decent team. Dayball has done a great job there.
Hey, they need a documentary for that guy for this season because the dude that must be having in the background,
bro,
for him to get to the team to where it is now.
Yeah, I
think they really need to have like a proper hard knock.
I think I think NFL Films is probably following the whole year, so I think they probably got some footage there.
So I mean, it's going next season is going to be really interesting because I think the Bengals are going to be properly fit. Or fitter than they were this season.
Yeah,
I think they got the O line still needs work. It's gotten better, but
they gotta invest in that for sure.
If they can get that, I mean, they will be okay. The Cardinals, I mean, I'm sorry, I gave up on that team. Beginning of the season, like
new coach. We'll see what the new coach does. Cause that was under Cliff. That was failing fast.
Chargers again.
They need a new coach, man. They're lying to themselves with Brandon Staley. I'm sorry, they're lying to themselves. They need a new coach. They really do because that's a team, and you know that's a team that really deserves that. You don't deserve, but they should be doing better than they are right now. And they just feel like that's just a perennial. That's an underachiever, and they've always been a perennial underachiever.
The Rams, but I think, as well, same sort of app group.
The Rams, their problem was that they sold their souls for that Super Bowl title.
Yeah.
And that was always going to come back to haunt them.
True.
That always comes back to haunt you in the NFL. When you sell your souls for a title like that, it comes back to haunt you. The who did it? The Eagles, that Super Bowl they won with Dougie P.
Mm.
That's the shit, yeah. That's what happened. They sold they didn't sell their souls, but you know, they kind of sold a little bit of their souls to win that title. And they paid for it for a couple of years. And they were lucky to kind of draft Jalen Hurts, and they built their team. You know, they got a good front office. Maybe Howie, I forgot his last name, but you know, I know his first name is Howie, and he's probably one of the best execs. And he just kind of just rebuilt the team in a very, very good way. And now they're back up. So yeah, the Rams aren't like that. The Rams they really said, "Fuck all these picks. We're gonna sell all this shit." And they won the title, and that's all that matters, because nobody can ever take that away. But yeah, that shit was always going to catch up to them.
Yeah. The team I was thinking of, Rams, Chargers, Bills. I mean, Bills just need to, they need a run game.
That was their issue. They couldn't run the football. They need a run game. They were just making sloppy mistakes. It's one of those teams that's like, they look good, and then there's just little things that they don't learn. There's a little things, like, for example, the Bengals. Bizzle complained a lot 2 years ago about the Bengals not being able to, not being able to be efficient in the red zone.
Mm.
This past season, they came back, they had no problems in the red zone. I mean, they lost to the AFC Championship game by that much, right? You know, and that's just because, you know, sometimes shit is not on your side. But they had no problems with the red zone this whole year. They had no issues. Once it started clicking for them, it's like week 4, they started clicking. They had no problems in the red zone. And that's what you need to improve on. The Bills, it was around, I remember the Miami game away, where, you know, up until that point, they were rolling. Everybody was saying, oh, this is their year, this is their year. They look legit. And they did. And then they met up with Miami, and Miami kind of smacked them in the mouth. And there was an opportunity there for their offense to kind of kill the game. And, you know, what's his name? Josh Allen kind of miffed a throw, threw it right into the ground. The guy was wide open in the corner, threw it into the ground. And there's a famous video of the OC upstairs just losing his shit, saying, dude, I schemed this perfectly. All you had to do was just hit the motherfucker, and he miffed it. And the whole year, those problems followed them. Sloppy mistakes, sloppy turnovers in the red zone when you need to kill it, like, it just followed them. And it's a habit they never kicked out.
Yeah.
And eventually it caught up to them when they faced the Bengals. And so with them, it's a minor thing. It's being able to just understand that, okay, this shit matters. If you run into a team that's smacking you in the fucking mouth and you can have a chance to kill, when you get to the red zone, no turnovers. Score. If you're going to get there, score. If you're going to get there, don't turn it over. If it's a clutch game, don't turn it over. Shit like that. You know, they just don't learn those little mistakes. Like, you know, even the Bengals game, when I remember watching them, the Bengals, that divisional game, and I'm like, yo, this is they've been making all the mistakes they made that game. They made them the entire year. Never fixed them.
Yeah.
And it's that shit that they never learned, is that, okay, when it's time to kick into perfect football, you got to kick in. And they haven't learned.
Yeah. I mean, NFL all day, but I never picked your brain on this because we didn't talk when it happened. But the blow up of the, since you're a Brooklyn fan.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, the team. To be fair, when they went into it, I was always of the opinion that if this works, this is gonna be special.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't, it's going to be all too evident, and they're going to, at some point, the guys upstairs are going to be like, you know, let's cut our losses and get as much as we can. Although they didn't get enough for those players.
No.
I feel like, I mean, the market now, and after that Rudy Gobert trade messed up the market, I think they kind of regularized the market again to be like, two all-time greats going for less than Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, yeah.
But I want to pick your brain on, did you see this coming when you're like, you know what?
Yeah, I did when, what happened? When KD requested a trade in the summer, it was right after Kyrie signed a 1-year extension. That's when I was like, okay, this is a ticking time bomb. And, you know, the trade with KD didn't happen because of the Rudy Gobert trade. The market was all messed up, and they were asking for a king's ransom for KD, and teams at that point, you know, I think Windows is the one that said that teams went, in the summertime, in the off season, teams aren't leveraging, aren't gutting their team for anyone. So when that happened, I was like, okay, everybody's gonna come back in. And then the Nash shit happened, and then he fired, and then, you know, we went on a little bit of a run. And I always felt like, so long as everybody stays on the court, the Nets are just gonna say, okay, we'll see what happens this season, and then in the off season. I always felt like this was breaking up after KD requested a trade, because I just knew that, okay, once you get to that position where it's like, I want out, no matter what, I know the shit happened with Kobe and it's happened with a lot of players, but with KD, especially the way things have happened the last 3 years, and how KD talked about, okay, the way things kind of transpired with the front office and the way they treated Kyrie. And I knew Kyrie was done. This is how I knew. I knew Kyrie was done after... This is when I knew this was going to end. When Kyrie... after the link shit with Kyrie and the way the front office and the owner kind of maneuvered that and handled that, which is the worst, but it was also kind of the way they could, the only way they could handle it. So when that happened, that's when I was like, okay, shit, this is not going to end well. Kyrie's done. I knew Kyrie was done, and I knew it would take a miracle. It would take them going to the Eastern Conference Finals and maybe to the finals. And even if they lost there, I knew, okay, if that happened, then they would be like, okay, they can probably get past this shit. But the moment Kyrie, you know, that happened with Kyrie, that's when I was like, okay, this shit is done. And after that, you know, I didn't think it would blow up now. But, you know, once Kyrie, you know, once he got to that position where, you know, he was like, look, me and this, we are not seeing eye to eye about contract extensions, you know. And they weren't like, it came out in the summertime that they're not going to offer a contract extension with him, because they were trying to have talks with him in the summer and it didn't come out. So they didn't find an agreement. And that's when he wanted a trade or was looking to get a trade or something. And then he didn't get one. So, you know, that's when I was like, okay, this is a ticking time bomb. This is a fucking ticking time bomb. And we'll see what happens. I thought it would get to until the end of the season. Everybody would go their separate ways. But, you know, once Kyrie, you know, I knew Kyrie was done with the organization. I knew the organization wasn't going to give Kyrie a contract without some stupid-ass stipulations.
Yeah.
So once all that shit transpired, you know, once KD went down, that's when I was like, and we started losing, and I was like, oh, shit, here we go. Here we go. You know, and then that's when Kyrie's like, I'm out of here, and then KD, him and KD were always a package deal. And so KD, I always felt like KD was going to be out at some point, I don't think he was going to sign an extension. I think he was going to be out, whether he saw out his contract or not. I think he was out. So it sucks because, you know, there's a good month or two there where it looked like we're kind of riding the ship. But now, you know, looking at it now, I think this was inevitable with the way things happen. And it's because I always go back to it as saying that it's just because motherfuckers couldn't stay on the court. You know, that was it. KD came and he was injured. Kyrie, his first year, he got injured like 40 games in or something. The next year, you know, the general manager makes, to me, which was just a trade that everybody says you make that trade every time, but that's not the trade they needed to make, in my eyes at least. But then, you know, KD gets off the floor, Kyrie disappears, comes back, KD goes back injured again, and then the next year, Kyrie can't come back because he won't get vaccinated. The team won't, you know, find a way to meet, you know, find common ground. KD gets hurt again, you know, and it also just the decision to hire Steve Nash instead of getting somebody who can actually maneuver, who's actually coached and sat on a bench. Like, it was just, they made so many bad decisions along the way. And it was just, you know, emphasized by the fact that, you know, they couldn't stay on the court, because winning solves everything. And so long as, and every time they were on the court, they've shown that they could figure it out.
True.
You know, so as long as we were able to stay on the court, I think a lot of those things would have been being able to just, you know, mitigate it or slid to the side. But we weren't able to stay on the court. And so, you know, I think the dominoes kept falling and kept falling. And it eventually leached. You know, I remember Windows said that, you know, Joe Tsai would rather go back to a team that was just hardworking, unproblematic, no superstars, and just winning 40 games and, you know, barely making the offs. And well, now that's what he has.
I mean, Mikal Bridges was a nice piece to get in that whole trade, I think, because I remember, who was it, someone was saying the morning after that teams came with some ridiculous packages for him.
I'm sorry, wait, I gotta actually go to the kitchen quickly. I'm sorry, left some shit out there.
Hope nothing in the stove or on the oven.
No,
I was saying, you know, Mikal Bridges, people were willing to offer the world, literally, to go crazy and get like him on, get him to the team to complete the piece, because a lot of playoff teams that had a lot of pieces to sell to get him,
yeah,
the cash space to get him, or used to take the luxury tax hit to get him, but they refused because they knew that they needed to start from somewhere. And I feel like now the Nets are probably going to build through the draft more than any other team.
Yeah, kind of
like what Boston did with. I mean, it was Boston tried to have its cake and eat it too with Danny Ainge, where we got Kyrie and Hayward, and then we got, you know, Tatum, Brown, Smart, and we tried to bring, you know, and we got Time Lord as well through the draft. Mm. Tried to merge that together, and that clearly didn't work.
No,
and then now it's mostly the guys we drafted and a few pieces here and there that made it work.
And the whole league is kind of trending towards that now, anyway.
Yeah, but the talent pool as well is like. I mean, the kids coming up will take a year or two to adjust, but I mean, the talent pool is there. They're more league ready than they've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes more sense to go that way. But what I feel is happening now, and I think it's people have had this on the cards for a very long time, is the death of the super team.
Yeah, no. That's
two
dying.
Superstars
yeah.
coming to one place. Because like the one thing I saw was with these young guys, your Ja Morant and they're not going to pair up with anyone, probably. Mm-mm. From what I can see, I don't see it happening. Maybe it's just my opinion. Maybe it will. Maybe you know, the future will change it. But I don't see Ja come going to Charlotte to play with Zoe.
No.
With Donovan Mitchell, you know, within the form that he's in.
Yeah.
You know, coming to Boston. Or Tatum wanting a trade to LA to link up with. I don't think we're going to see that, because I think as much as the super team is complicated, because the spotlight you have on you is unnecessary.
No, it really is
the most unnecessary thing.
Yeah.
Because you are now at a point where you're like, so is this all worth it?
Yeah.
Because like with the Kyrie, I mean, we saw it in LA Lakers most recently with AD and LeBron. They won their chip, which is better because at least they can say, you know, we won our chip. However, with Kyrie and KD, they didn't win anything.
Mm.
LeBron, Wade, and Bosh. That first year was painful.
Yeah,
That Mavericks loss was painful.
Painful, yeah.
And then they got their shit together, and then they won.
You look at the Clippers. They came, you know, Kawhi and PG came with the idea of winning a chip, and they haven't won one yet.
Exactly. So it's like the super team, I think, the death knell for the super team, I think, was that, not the Kyrie, KD. I think it was Kawhi and PG.
Yeah.
It killed it.
It did.
Because the expectations were through the roof, and then nothing happened.
Uh-huh.
Literally nothing happened after that.
No, nothing did.
So I think at this point, I think we're looking at maybe never seeing, probably seeing two superstars. I've always got Jalen and Jason together, coming through the draft together,
mm-hmm.
rather than us seeing, we'll see complementary pieces around draft or assets that people go for. Because I think the Dallas Mavericks are trying to do that with Kyrie and Luka, but that's not going to fucking
happen. That'll be a spectacle for sure. But, you know.
Good basketball.
I don't know. Yeah.
Offensive basketball.
But yeah, defensive basketball. They're not going to do shit.
They need three two-way players to make that thing work.
You're
not going to get that. I believe that the Suns are in a better position.
Yeah, that I can't wait to see that. That's a really good team. Because people can complain about depth, but the depth that they have now is, at this point in time, it's good. Everybody's going to be playing playoff rotations anyway.
Yep.
And I think they have eight players. I think they have an eight-player rotation when KD comes back. That's at least... In the West, the way the West is now, I think that's manageable.
Yeah. I think the Suns are going to be... I don't think they're lining up to win everything. I'm always going to say Boston this year seems to be the team that has got a shit together.
No, you are. You're the team to beat, but
Boston, yeah. Playoffs and Boston regular season, two very, very, very...
Playoffs is a whole new season. Whatever happens in the regular season has no merit. You just hope that your team is built in a way that can handle the playoffs, but it means nothing. Once you get to the playoffs, new season starts. And that's why y'all look good, but the Bucks are right there, bro.
Well, I mean, the game against the Bucks was it last night, where the Bucks won.
Ago, yeah.
2 nights where they won. I'm like, yeah. I mean, if this was a 7-game series, this would be an interesting game one.
Oh yeah,
very interesting game one. But I'm still of the opinion that this season is going to go to someone we never really expected, because a team is going to switch on. The Cavs are a team. I'm like, I like how they look. I like how they play.
Yeah.
If they do qualify for the playoffs and they finish above the Nets, this will be the first time. Without LeBron, they've made it to the postseason, which in itself is a mark in the sand. Can they do a Miami in the bubble?
No, probably, yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see.
I mean, it's one of those teams I'm like, conditions are right.
Could they
potentially pull a Miami in the bubble?
They could. They could, maybe. But it's going to be interesting to see the playoffs this year. It's going to be very interesting because there are a lot of teams. I still think in the West, I think the West is going to be I think the West is just the Nuggets and everyone else. And everyone else is just fighting to get there.
I'm kind of disappointed as well in the postseason. Because it's like you said, it's a whole new season. So if they go to the postseason, the same mentality they've gone through with they've gone even with a full complement.
Uh-huh.
It's a different ball game.
It is.
And it's now it's more set pieces like I would say, well, for people who don't watch basketball, it's like test rugby.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, a once-off game.
Or no.
It's test rugby. It's like test cricket, put it that way, where it's slower.
Yeah,
it's much slower.
You gotta strategize it. And there are a lot of teams that aren't built for you. I think you'll see it this after. It always happens after All Star break, where like you're looking at it and you're thinking to yourself, they get into playoff games, and then once you get into playoff games, that's when you start thinking to yourself. That's when you start seeing, okay, who is built for this shit? You get into playoff situations. Every game becomes a playoff situation. You got to start to see who's built for it. So in the West, especially, like you're right. The Nuggets, right now, they look good, and then you're gonna watch them in the playoffs, and you're gonna be like, "What's going on here?"
Not the same team, because you could see the Warriors again doing what they did last season, where they start not picking teams apart, but outlasting teams, particularly in the third quarter.
Yeah,
and then building that.
They haven't been healthy. That's been the issue. Yeah, they just haven't been healthy.
Did they trade Wiseman?
Yeah, they did. They had to. That was a marriage that just, you know. Wiseman hadn't played enough basketball to get thrust into that system.
Yeah.
He needed to play a lot more basketball.
So who did they get though?
I don't remember who they got.
Because I think Sadiq Bey, they got him in that trade.
No, yeah, they traded him somewhere else. I think they got like picks and they got GP2, but he's injured.
Oh, okay.
But they got GP2 and a whole bunch of picks from it.
So which means they'll spend that in the summer.
Yeah, exactly. For someone. Yeah.
Which I think they're filling the 5 spot now. Because I think that's where they're most concerned about in building depth at the 2 and probably the 3.
Yeah. No, they're I think they're buying time. I think they trust what they have now. They won a chip without Wiseman, right? So they're not concerned about that.
Yeah.
They just needed to update their bench. But, you know, the West is going to be interesting to see, especially because it's going to be a gauntlet as everybody tries to fight for places.
Mm.
And I think the West is wide open. The East is going to come down to 3 teams. It's really just the Bucks, Philly, and then Boston. But
I'm not completely sold on Philly, though.
No?
I'm not sold. No, I mean, they're a good team. I'm not saying they're a bad team.
Yeah, no, sold on. It's the Doc Rivers thing. Yeah. I just don't have faith in Doc. Doc in the playoffs. I think he has a team now that can survive that shit. But I just think Doc, and Embiid. I think what's always fucked up him is that Embiid has never been, like, proper healthy to be able to survive the grind of the playoffs. And he always ends up getting a little tired at some point.
Yep.
And the fatigue hits him so bad. But I think, for real, I think Philly is going to be about... What always plays into it as well is the matchups in terms of the seeding, where you seed. Because Philly can just coast towards... I think 1 and 2, depends on where they finish. Because 1 and 2 don't face each other. That's why the Bucks, if the Bucks stay in second, 1 and 2 don't face each other. But 1 and 3 end up finding each other at some point. So you all end up facing Philly at some point, and that will be a good test for y'all. I think you can handle it so long as Time Lord and L are healthy. But, you know, that I have more faith in y'all this year than I did last year. I think y'all are built. What I've seen, it's all about habits. In every game that I've seen, the fact that you guys took the Bucks to overtime without your stars says a whole bunch about, you know, the level of talent in that team. So...
I mean, the depth does not now make sense in the positions, because I thought getting what's his name, Brogdon, getting him in with
great decision. That's a great pickup. That's exactly what you needed.
Because now we've got that someone who can come into the first rotation and then as well lead the second rotation and get your 25, you know, your 20-25 a night. And we've been missing that for a really, really, really long time.
Yeah.
Because I mean, the first runs we made, it was, you know, Isaiah Thomas doing his thing, you know, hitting for 40 and 50 and nights, and it wasn't sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And then Al Horford having to be the guy who comes 20 to 25 to 30 a night. Again, that was unsustainable. But now when, you know, Tatum is in the picture and, you know, he's now more switched on.
Yeah.
He's in MVP mode. He can literally decide that, you know, tonight is the night I'm going to, you know, go for 30 or go for 40.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jaylen Brown on the other side again giving us, because what Tatum doesn't give us in the mid-range, you're going to get it from Brown.
You definitely would, yeah.
He'll be there to drive. He'll be there to see, no, listen, man, the 3 game is not working. We need to go to the hoop.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll get us at least to start a run or to end a run.
Exactly.
So I think we're fine. I think Time Lord is a big piece to that because defensively.
Yeah, he's important.
But defensively, for the length as well, we'll need him. Our Horford is a good piece to have in there because you got a big man of the three. And the guy we traded from the Thunder, again.
Oh, Muscala.
He's a what? He's a, what, 30-something percent three-point shooter and he's a big man?
Mm,
I mean, it's nice for the second and third rotations.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you go to the playoffs, those rotations are limited to about 8 to 10 players.
At the exactly. Most. Exactly.
You're going to use the full 15. So I think it's going to be... Hey, I mean, after what happened to the coach in the offseason, I did not think this is how we're going to start and this is how we're going to be this season.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think building the culture has worked.
Oh, yeah.
The culture has definitely
made No. You've built the right culture there, man. And it's going to be interesting to watch y'all. Going to be interesting to watch the playoffs, man. For real, for real. I think the playoffs are going to be fun this year because as much as it's all, especially the East, is like three horse races, there's still a lot of teams that are going to be like a hard series.
Mm.
Hard series, especially in the West. I really can't wait to see the Suns and the Mavericks and all those teams. Those are going to be very, very entertaining games. Especially the Suns-Mavericks. I hope they meet up at some point. I hope they still have to play. I think they still have a game to play. Because that's going to be fun. That's just going to be entertaining basketball for everyone.
I mean, it still breaks my brain that I was the only one when Luka was dropped. Like, why is this guy going so low? I remember everyone, pundits, you know, it was like the Kristaps Porzingis thing when it happened and people like, you know, were freaking out. Oh my God, how could they trade for this guy? We don't even know who he is. I remember Luka coming from, because I used to watch the Eurobasket.
Right.
I'm like, are these people serious?
Mm.
I think it was Lonzo Ball going before him and whatever. I'm like.
Yeah, people were chasing athleticism. They didn't think a Euro guy could come in and do this thing.
Eurobasket MVP when he was a teenager.
Yeah.
Says a lot about his offensive talent.
Yeah. See, they've been drafting. But after Jokic and especially Luka, I think they have a different respect for Eurobasket players.
They don't fit on the mold of that scout sheet as other players do. I think it's like KD as well. KD could be a Euro player in terms of spirit because he didn't fit on anyone's. He was never the strongest, not the fastest, but give him the ball.
Yeah, and you sound, yeah. Sound. They understand the game.
Yeah, so I think with the drafts coming up, I think we're going to see a lot more Euro players going higher.
Mm.
Than because it's experience. Eurobasket is pretty much going to play with adults. It's not, you know,
college. Because I think they're more fun. They're like more developed than college players. And college players are also just... College players have their advantages, but...
I mean, but I'm thinking if you're playing in an established league where you're earning a salary where the expectations are high
as
compared to like collegiate sports, to disrespect the collegiate sports in any respect, but I'm saying it's like the stakes are higher and you face more competent opposition more often that in Eurobasket than you do when you're playing in college. Because in college, your divisions are set. You might have one, two games there where it's like, March Madness, you know, where you face like competent teams, but for the large part, you're not going to face a lot of really good teams.
Mm,
as opposed to Europe, where you're facing really good teams, especially as well as you're playing in the Eurobasket Champions League or the equivalent of it, and you're facing these continental really, really good teams.
Yes.
Different sort of psychologies, you know, there are more schools of thought around the game,
particularly
as you go to Eastern Europe,
mm-hmm.
than you have in America, because America is like, you know, it's built a certain way. So I think they're going to, like you said, they're going to respect them a bit more, but also... they're going to go a little bit higher than they would.
Yeah, that's true. No, they will. They will.
Because those are like, third round guys, second round guys, late second round guys.
I don't know where he plays. I don't think he plays in the States, does he? Wimbanyama.
He plays in college, I think.
Yeah. I thought he's a Euro player. But anyway, yeah, no, you're right. They're going to go higher because there is, I don't watch that much college basketball, so I don't know if there is, but there's no one that I'm hearing about, at least. I think we won't know until March Madness, so we'll see. But yeah, you're right. There's going to be a after especially what was happening, just Jokic and Luka especially, they're going to put a different lens on drafting Euro players and just being able to just recognize that you could probably find really good talent, franchise players.
Giannis, in that man. Giannis, we took RJ Hunter over Giannis.
Mm.
To this day, that hurts. This day, I'm like, have you gotten Giannis?
Yeah.
Then Brown.
Yeah.
Then Tatum.
I mean,
wouldn't have fallen like that. I mean,
yeah, I think you would have not have gotten Brown.
But I think Tatum was going to fall down the board, just like Donovan Mitchell fell down the board, because Donovan Mitchell fell lower than anyone expected.
He did.
Very low.
Very low. Yeah, which is crazy when you then see what he did his first year.
Yeah, and then now when he's reinvigorated and everything seems to be lining up for him, how well he's playing in this Cavs system.
That's gonna be a good team when they really build around him and Garland.
and he gets more mature. Because these guys are just getting older, they're getting more mature, they're getting bet in. And we have to remember that college players now are betting into the game much faster than they have before. Because the skills, you're getting more skills. It's like the NFL. You get a lot more NFL-ready rookies now than you did way back, where it would take time. Or you need someone special to walk through the door and be like, I can take this game one.
Yeah, because there's a blending of the systems.
And also, it's high stakes and it's faster. The game is much faster. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember I was watching this thing on NFL Films where rookies were describing the transition from college football to the NFL. And they say, man, it's 10 times faster than what we were used to.
Mm.
And people are so much smarter.
Yeah.
Even the crap teams, they'll give you hell.
Exactly.
Because you're playing on a whole different level.
You're
playing against boys, playing against men. There's now different way of looking at
that. That's the adjustment. It's just the physical side of it and the mental grind that is a season and all the other shit that comes with it. But you can tell, yeah, in terms of being ability, they're more ready now than before. And then that just this comes with the time. There's just access to more. They can get NFL training. They can get NFL, you know, they can get training from NFL trainers, right? And people who coach, like a college kid can go get training from somebody who coaches an all-star.
Mm.
You know, or an NFL college football kid can go get, you know, skills development from a trainer who trains and, you know, and trains and develops all pro receivers or all pro tight ends or all pro quarterbacks and stuff. So there's that kind of access, you know, and the development of that industry in terms of high level coaching, where now you have coaches who just provide services to the pros, players trying to get into the pros, high school kids. And that kind of crossover, it kind of blends into, leads, you know, it kind of bleeds into the fact that kids are now ability-wise ready. I think there's just the grind of learning how to play the game at a professional level that, you know, you can't experience until you play.
Yeah.
But the ability to just, the learning how the pros, training like how the pros train and stuff, that shit for a lot of young players gets taught pretty early. And yeah, you're seeing it now. Anyway, I think it's a good time to end here. Yeah, are there any recommendations that you want to give out before we shut shop?
Watch the Flash trailer. I didn't believe until I saw it in the group, and I'm like, okay, all right. I think that's the only recommendation I have. Well, there's a book I was thinking about. I forgot the name. I probably recommended it before, but if I haven't, on the off chance I haven't. If you're in business or a startup, or whatever, it's called The Hard Things: How to Build a Business.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Check that out. I'll probably leave a link to it somewhere so you can go see it on Amazon. But yeah, if you're in business and you really, 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 really think that you've got a novel idea, you don't.
Nice.
I'm sorry,
nice.
You don't.
It's the truth. That is the truth. No, that's good. Yeah, I recommend the Flash trailer too. You know, super psyched about that Yellow Lightning.
I saw that text and I was like, man, can only be happy because it's only... when I saw it, I'm like, at least one person's gonna be happy about this.
Man, look, man, I've been waiting for that movie for 4 years, and there's no amount of nitpicking and critiquing that anyone can tell me that is going to lead me away from that movie. Which I think it looks good. I think it looks better than people think, but I'm just excited. Flash is one of my favorite heroes in general.
Hope this is a Top Gear. This is a Top Gun Maverick sort of movie where, yes, it's got its flaws, it's got its problems, but it's a hell of a time.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to be a hell of a time. I really do. So that's a good one. I don't have anything else either. I don't have anything else. I haven't been scouring. I haven't been exploring the internet that much in terms of looking for new things. But whatever he recommended, I recommend too. Thank you for joining us. This has been dope. A live on location. First of many.
Mm.
We're going to change the location whenever we can. But if you stuck around, we thank you. But go do something. Peace.
Peace.